days of wine and roses. Laugh and run away.
Hello, everyone. This is Joanne Salisbury Troxell, and welcome to the Poet's Corner. With me today in this last series of Sunday night talks about poetry for National Poetry Month is June Safford. Hi, June.
Hi, Joanne.
You know, June, we've known each other for a long time. We've been teachers together. And when I thought about you, I thought about how varied you are. You know, you sang in the choir, you painted, you did poetry, you love Bach, you love stories, and there seems to be a busyness besides your zany and fun and crazy, and I want to mention a couple things about that. Do you remember when we went to Great Falls for a teacher's meeting? And that beautiful high school in Great Falls is on a knoll. You actually walk up, and I remember thinking that. But for some reason, they gave us all skippy ropes. Uh-huh. Remember that?
Yes, I do.
And so we couldn't figure it out. I mean, skipping ropes, you know, they were tied up nearly. So we tied them together, and in the hallway, bunch of teachers, you and I, and I don't know, a couple of mothers, we jumped rope.
Yes.
And the janitor stood there and watched us. And he had the most befuddled look. He could not believe these teachers acting like fourth graders.
Right.
It was a wonderful moment. I've never forgotten it.
I love it.
And, yeah.
Yeah. Don't you think, Joanne, that the child still reigns matter.
And all it took was a jump rope to bring it out.
Yes, exactly.
And I remember we all got into that whole motion of while we were waiting to jump in.
Yes.
It was hysterical. But we were so into it, I don't think we quite understood how funny it was. And, of course, I can remember you coming in my room taking pictures, and you have more pictures of me with that one singular look on my face that's never been there before or since. And it was that artistry in you. You just somehow had to capture the world in a poem or in a painting or in a picture. And you hail from Brooklyn. Tell us a little bit about how you ended up in Bozeman, Montana from Brooklyn, New York.
Well, it wasn't a journey I took alone, Joanne. I took it with Jeff. And Jeff had just graduated from Rutgers with his PhD, and he was seeking a job in history. And at that time, it was still difficult to get a job at a university teaching American history. He managed to get one at Bozeman, Montana. So that's what took us out. And we drove out with our two children, who were very young. And then I was pregnant with Alex, 7 months pregnant. We were in a VW bus. Nobody ever, we didn't have seat belts. The kids were in a playpen in the bus. And we got here. That's how we got here.
You know, when you first came here, you were on a farm, weren't you? Did you buy a farm?
Yes, we came into a farm. I don't think we have enough time in this discussion to tell you how we came into it. But we, for 11 years, we were boarding horses. And the only horse that I ever saw was in Central Park with a policeman on a horse. And before you know it, in Montana, I was person who was boarding horses and feeding them hay.
You know, I remember a story about a calf in your kitchen. You know, do you remember that?
I do. We bought that calf from Mary Bolhoise's husband, Gary. We got our calves from him. And the calf was very wet. It was winter when we got this one, and the calf was wet. So we brought it in the dining room where we had a wood stove, and then we were drying it with towels, and it was crapping all over our floor, but we did those things.
You know, it really was an adventure that
it was,
you came
it
here.
It was an adventure.
And what great spirit to take on the West from Brooklyn. Was Jeff also from Brooklyn?
He was born in Greenwich Village.
Oh, he was.
Yes, yeah. And then his parents moved to Staten Island. So
what was it like for you, born in growing up and going to school in Brooklyn? Where did you go to school in Brooklyn? What schools?
You mean I went to grade schools, you know, high school? I went to an all-girls high school. That was interesting. And then before I went to college on Staten Island. That's exactly how I got to meet Jeff in college. He was a Staten Islander. But before I did that, I went to Brooklyn College, and I took a class in the Romantic Poets. And I had no time at home to do any homework or to do any reading. So I did all my Romantic Poetry reading on the BMT subway. That was such a juxtaposition of my experience with being taken with going through the tunnels with Wordsworth. Was very interesting.
You know, what better use of that time, that space?
Yes, true. Yeah.
You know, because that is a space where you can fill it in with almost anything.
Exactly.
And to be able to do Wordsworth, I mean, I don't know. I think that would be wonderful.
It's worth a poem, isn't it?
It is worth a poem.
I know. I've thought about that for many years.
You know, it's interesting. I had a subscription to The New Yorker from the time I was about 18. But I was, when you mentioned that, on a subway, and I used to be on this bus in the Twin Cities, 25 below, and at this corner, seven corners came, and we'd just wait there, and the steam would be out, be cold. It was like, am I ever going to get home? And I had clipped out a story called Raise High the Roof Beams, Carpenter, by Salinger. Mm-hmm. And I would take it out, and in the light from the streetlight, I would sit on that side and read that. And that was what... You know, so there are ways that we can use this time.
Exactly.
And in some ways, it's kind of a privilege to be able to nail that poet down in that tunnel and that experience,
right.
You know.
And the fact that my maiden name is Billings. And so the only thing I knew about Montana was that there was a city in Montana with the name Billings.
What were the winters like for you? They must have been ghastly. They were so cold in that time.
Oh, right. Those were the wonderful times when the winter kept the population down. Do you remember?
Yeah.
Very. 20 below, maybe 10 days in a row, and we would be feeding our animals. And, yeah, it was a character building, I think. Jeff was up to it.
You know, we lived in this same old house. And at that time, in the 70s, 80s, during Christmas, between Christmas and New Year's on holiday, we'd have people over for soup. And we'd spend the whole afternoon, because it was too cold to ski, to do anything except that. And Vern and I would go downstairs, he with the acetylene torch and me with the flashlight, and thaw the pipes every 30 minutes.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Okay. That's what it meant to be a Montanan.
That's what it meant to be, and not many people wanted to do it.
No. Yeah. Sometimes I had to take the battery out of my cars and take them into the house to warm it so I could start the car the next day. That was our story.
Well, how did it happen that you got a job at Bozeman Senior High School?
Well, I was subbing. And a teacher, a very famous teacher, and I'm having a senior moment. She was wonderful, and she left to have a baby, and I was subbing, and Heini Lund, maybe he noticed I was wearing a Norwegian sweater, but he hired me. It was interesting.
Well, when I came there, I think I was hired in 65 or 66. You were already there.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of remember that. I think that you were going to have Brooke somewhere along that. And, you know, those were really wonderful days of teaching at Bozeman Senior High. I felt so lucky. The school was practically new. And, in fact, I think it was only a couple years old, maybe three, when we moved there.
Yeah.
And now that whole wing where you and I taught, E-Wing, is gone.
Exactly.
It just, and it makes me kind of mad because it was such a new school. And how could it be torn down in our lifetime?
Right.
You know?
But what I think is so wonderful, Joanne, is that you said you would teach creative writing. It got to be a popular elective in the school. It was a brand new class when I came in. No one had really, only one person had ever taught a class in it. So it wasn't something that was taught in most schools. We weren't prepared to teach it. And so that was the excitement about teaching creative writing, was the development that took place in our own lives, in ourselves as people too. And to see what we could affect in young people, because they were really, many of the kids who took the class were really people who needed to work out different problems in their lives. And we sort of were aids.
Really
we aided
true.
Them. And so the class was a gift.
You know, that is so interesting because you needed somebody to help this class because you had so many kids were signing up for it, which just emphasized that need. And then when you came over to me and said, you know, would you teach creative writing? I just thought, and you said, I'll help you. And I said, God, I don't know how to do this. I don't, you know. I knew how to do a class, say, creatively, and we wrote a poem once in a while or whatever. But to deal with that from them, to get it from them, I just, and it was, you were marvelously helpful. And what I'd find is, you would say, here's the way I do it. And then I would look at it and I would do it, kind of modify it for the way
mm-hmm,
I did it.
Mm-hmm.
And but you're absolutely right, June. I never heard such fabulous poets,
yes,
writers, and they got better and better. It was an inspiration.
You know what I did, Joanne, knowing that I was coming here to maybe read a poem or two of my own, because I'm very busy doing that. That is something that is my passion. But I found a poem, actually a book of poems by a former student of mine who graduated in 95. She put together a book that was so artistic and so beautiful. And I've never encountered her before, and I've been looking through this book, and I just think, oh, I would like to get it back to her. But she had this wonderful name of Mary Sweet, and I think the last name might have been Powers. But anyway, I touch this book, and I look at it, and I feel this is the product of somebody's artistic, imaginative self. And I just want very much to, I'm so thankful that I can see in front of me what was affected by what we did in the classroom.
Well, you know, I look at that book, she made the paper. She actually made the paper for that book. And I look at that and I think, everything about that, she wanted it to be her book. Everything about it. And the confidence of that. And that's what I think that we began to see, is how this confidence in their own abilities began to come through so much. It was just such a privilege. And that is a beautiful book.
Yes.
And Mary Sweet, if you're out there, call your old teacher, June Safford, and take a look at what kind of a wonderful kid you were.
Thank you so much.
And probably still are.
What we could do, Joanne, that was so exciting, was we could introduce kids to poems and to poets. They have no other way to get that introduction. So I wanted to read a poem by a poet I personally I'm very close to in terms of my own psyche, and that is Linda Paston. And I'd like to read a poem that really stirs me at this moment. I think most of you who are listening who happen to know me know that my husband died this year, so I'm redefining myself. I'm now making my way. Anyway, this poem really said something to me, and it's by Linda Paston, In Back Of. She quotes William Stafford first. I'm looking for things back of remarks that are said. And then she begins her poem. In back of I love you stands goodbye. In back of goodbye stands, it was lovely there in the grass, drenched in so much green together. Words that wait are dark as shadows in the back rooms of mirrors. When you raise your right hand in greeting, they raise their left in farewell.
Oh,
learning to say farewell.
That's beautiful. I think it might be a good time for us to read The Widow by Maxine Kuhlman. And these are just those wonderful poets that we discovered as we were maturing, and
yes,
they were maturing along with us.
Exactly.
And Maxine Kuhlman was the head of the poetry section at the museum.
May I start the poem then?
Yeah.
It's called The Widow.
So this is called The Widow.
I latch the storm door, shunt the cat down cellar, set the thermostat,
and climb 12 steps to go to bed. Myself, myself. I fold the spread.
The sheets are crisp. All over town, the yellow mouths of bedrooms yawn.
And close on lovers, two by two. I stuff the noisy door. Undo
my buttons, hooks, and eyes, and stand back from the mirror.
Under hands that mapped our senses softly asleep, touch in the fold and turn in sleep.
My body turned in appetite, my jailbird body, long and light.
And finger marked, unvisited, grow stupid in the tidy bed.
Now, as I turn the clock face down, midnight strikes all over town. Joanne, if I could, I would like to read a poem that I wrote about an experience I had with Jeff, From Under a Woolen Cap.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. This actually isn't the experience. I've been writing poems about our love and our time together. And I have written them about experiences, but this particular one is called From Under a Woolen Cap. This February morning, from a shorn ash tree above where I shovel snow, I keep hearing a singular song, sending winter a trilling message. Despite wearing a woolen cap, I hear the notes of a bird so in love as to upend my season of disbelief. I'm still cold from the loss. Who sent this bird anyway? One solitary chickadee on a naked limb above, announcing something so remote, a secret I could live with, from a sparked bird, unafraid to issue his wild call to a mate, still shaking the snow from her feathers.
I love that poem, too.
Thank you.
I think that's just wonderful.
I heard the bird.
Yeah.
Jeff was often asked, what kind of bird would you like to be in the next life? Because he was a birder. And we always asked people that question when we were birding. And generally, the males would say, a hawk, you know, an eagle. Jeff always said, a black-capped chickadee.
Oh, yes. I mean, elegant. Elegant.
Kind.
Yes, really wonderful. Do you have another poem?
I could read another one. This explains something that happened quite soon after Jeff died. It's called Brushwork. Underneath I wrote, "Everyone makes firewood from a fallen tree." He carries a few dense logs in his arms, wood from the desiccated pines in our yard, infected with blue stain, for which our arbor doctor credits pine bark beetles, about the size of worms I sometimes find in flour, suffocating in the crock too long, mixed into something for someone. In a warm kitchen, the dough rises, a gift. Were I to tell you, across the West, a billion green trees have been repainted a rust color by these havoc-wrecking artists, sadistically denying us the inherent pleasure of green, how long would you mourn such caprice? There were five pines along our fence line, blue-stained. While still green, now one is firewood from a felled tree. A distressed me opens the back door to allow him in. I opened no door to grant him a January exit. A felled tree from the forest of our tall years, in whose arms was he now cradled? My final transition to widowhood had me moving between floors in a home never meant for one. Death marks the distances of aloneness. But when I opened the wood stove doors to light a fire, so in need of warmth, the electricity gone, temperatures in the minus, there, he appeared in the crumpled newspaper, twigs, kindling, organized below several reasonable-sized logs, carefully placed and ready for any match. I could feel him. He had been there before me at one surprising time. Such heart. I longed to let him in.
Ken, that poem, it's just so incredible. And I think that you live with really good memories. Mm-hmm. You were a great, great caretaker of the man you loved, and he always adored you. I don't think I ever saw a man that adored his wife any more than you.
Thank you, Joanne.
You know,
He said to me that, you know, June, he said, I longed to let you know how much there is in you to give.
Thank you so much for being here today, June. It's been such a pleasure, and I'll look forward to that book of poems that I know you're working on. This is Joanne Salisbury-Troxell from the Poets' Corner. Sip the wine, smell the ephemeral roses, and read a poem. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.